Welcome to this episode of Sleep Health. I'm Dr. Alison Bentley, and because it's August, we're going to be talking about women's sleep. So sleep as it changes through the woman's lifetime. This is going to include pregnancy, it's going to include menopause and the kind of sleep disorders that we might get in those two very specific areas of lifetime. But really, we can talk about sleep and gender differences right from birth. What we know about children and their sleep is that there's very little difference between little boys' sleep and little girls' sleep. There is some evidence that in boys, as I think all mothers know who've had boys and girls, that there is a delay in the maturation in boys' brains such that little boys tend to have more difficulty getting their sleep right when they're little babies. And so they may take a little bit longer to sleep through the night, but certainly doesn't make massive differences. Like, we're not in a situation where twice the number of boys are having sleeping problems compared to girls. So sleeping problems that occur in babies are generally not about gender. It's usually about behavioral, and we've done a podcast on this, so please go back and listen to that particular one if you want to know what's happening there. But what does happen is from the first menstrual cycle that girls have, which can be as young as the age of 10 or 11 years old, from the first menstrual cycle, there are quantifiable changes that occur in sleep. Some of them are good. So usually when you start having menstrual cycles, you start having estrogen and progesterone occurring in the body. So obviously through the menstrual cycle, the first part of the menstrual cycle has a lot of estrogen in that. And estrogen is good for sleep. It protects us against breathing problems during sleep. It makes sleep deeper. And so it's all good for sleep. In the second part of the menstrual cycle, so after ovulation occurs, 2 weeks in, the second 2 weeks of the menstrual cycle, there's a lot of progesterone around. And progesterone, again, is good for sleep. It improves sleep duration, so you tend to sleep a little bit longer. You tend to have a better quality of sleep. And so it improves deep sleep. So the deep sleep that's not about REM sleep, the deep sleep that's the non-REM sleep, it improves that kind of sleep. It's also protective against sleep apnea. So it improves the muscle tone that's occurring in the throat. It also is what we call a ventilation stimulant, so increases your breathing, makes you breathe better at night. And all of these are important when we look at menopause and we get loss of these hormones and an increase in apnea that occurs at that time. So that's why I'm mentioning the breathing thing, even though it's really in young children who normally shouldn't have breathing issues and apnea. And then if we look at the EEG, and so these studies have been done looking at the EEG at night in little girls who have gone through what we call menarche, which is the beginning of menstruation, before they start menstruation, and then after they start menstruation, we can see subtle changes in the EEG. However, these subtle changes are not going to produce sleeping problems, but we see changes in the kind of patterns in the EEG that are very subtle. And generally, we don't know what they mean, but they do mean that women from that point on are more likely to get sleep problems than men are or boys are at that age. So during the adolescence, there's not much difference between girls and boys. Everybody around the age of 14, 15 years old gets a little delay in their sleep and in the timing of their sleep. So kind of a little jet lag, usually by an hour only. So you would have around the age of 14, you would have children who usually go to sleep very easily at 9:30, let's say at night, suddenly go, I can't fall asleep at 9:30. It's much easier at 10:30. And so that's the delay. There's also a delay in the morning. So if they usually wake up at 6:00, the delay is that at 6:00, they're now super grumpy when they wake up, finding it difficult to get moving in the morning, just not feeling great, often not feeling hungry, don't want to eat breakfast at that time, and need to eat later on in the morning. And it's like a little bit of jet lag, like they've just popped over one time zone. And generally, school times and university times keep them on track, keep the sleep into the in the space where it's meant to be. Occasionally that doesn't work, and we are going to be doing a podcast later on sleep changes that occur in primary school and adolescence, specifically because there are it's important to look at the sleep problems that might occur there because of studying and exams. And so we'll talk a lot more about the problems that occur there. But for this one, we're talking mainly about women and how women are prone to particular problems. So the next big thing that happens with women is often pregnancy. Now, during pregnancy, obviously there's a lot more estrogen, a lot more progesterone that's happening during that period. But the women during pregnancy are often prone to sleep disorders. So let's look at normal changes in pregnancy first. So many women in the first 3 months of pregnancy will report excessive sleepiness, excessive tiredness. And this is not about bulk. This is not about being large. This is all of the progesterone and estrogen that is making you sleepy. It's kind of a nice time because you can have naps during the day and you can take advantage of this by having a lot of sleep at night. And that's a normal change that would occur in pregnancy. But as you move through the pregnancy, and particularly in the third, so the last 3 months of pregnancy, there are a lot more things that can happen there. So part of the problem with sleep then is that you are large. You have this large tummy in front of you, and so it can be difficult to sleep, particularly if you're more likely to sleep on your tummy. You can't do that anymore. But also moving around in bed is a lot harder. So you tend to get stuck in one position and wake up because it's a lot more effort to be able to move into another position. So just positional things about sleep can make your sleep more difficult. Then you tend to go to the toilet more often at night. So you wake up more often to go to the toilet more often. Then the sleep disorders are more likely to happen in this period. So the two big sleep disorders that we are concerned about is sleep apnea and restless leg syndrome. Restless leg syndrome, much more likely to happen in this last 3 months of pregnancy because of iron moving from the mom into baby and a relative iron deficiency that's occurring in the mother, and therefore more likely to have restless leg syndrome. Please go and look at that podcast if that's of interest to you to learn about restless leg syndrome specifically, but you're much more likely. So the prevalence of restless legs in the general population is about 11%. During the last 3 months of pregnancy, it goes up to 30%. The good news is that once baby's been delivered and everything's kind of settled back to normal, is that in most women, the restless legs goes away. So there's no reason to think that you're now going to have restless legs for the rest of your life. So it's specific to pregnancy. Now, sleep apnea is a thing that you wouldn't necessarily associate with young women who are pregnant, but there are changes that occur during pregnancy which make apnea more likely. So we've spoken previously about sleep apnea, and what sleep apnea is a collapse of the airway right up behind the jaw in that area, which is a soft kind of floppy tube designed to close every time you swallow. And with sleep apnea, it's collapsing when you breathe in at night. So obviously when you breathe in, you are sucking air through that collapsible airway, and things happen during pregnancy which make that more likely. So the first thing that happens is that generally you put on a lot of weight when you're pregnant, and that weight can collect around the neck area and narrow the airway just from the outside, just from weight around the outside of the neck area. Also, women often tend to get stuffy noses when they're pregnant, and that makes it harder to breathe in because we're designed to breathe through our nose. That's where the humidifier is and the warming area of the nose is. So we're designed to breathe through our nose. And if you have a stuffy nose, you're now having to suck harder through that stuffiness to be able to get the amount of air that you need every breath. So most people need about 500 mils every breath to get enough oxygen in there to dilute the carbon dioxide and then to get the carbon dioxide out. So if you have a stuffy nose, you have to suck harder. So if you think about it now, you've got this airway, which might be a little bit narrower than it should be, and you've got to suck harder. So the walls are tending to collapse in on themselves. And so you can have a situation where women snore more likely during pregnancy. So I think a lot of bed partners will go, "You're snoring," when you're pregnant. So if you're snoring, then there's a partial obstruction to the air and it can lead to apnea. And apnea, it would just be that often in young people, apnea can be very mild and it's just a catch in the breath at night. So there would be snoring. So you hear this kind of breathing happen. And then all of a sudden you go, you'd hear that little gap and a little catch in the snoring, that means you've been woken up because the airflow through that part of the throat has got critical. And the brain's going, nope, this is a bad idea. Let's open up the throat. And to do that, it needs to wake you up. So it'll wake you up. Not that you would know that you've woken up at all. Most people with apnea don't know they have it at all. You wouldn't know that, but it's just opening the airway up. Unfortunately, by going back to sleep, if everything's exactly the same as it was, you're likely to have another one of them. And so you can have a run of apneas that are occurring during the night. So sleep apnea, why are we concerned about sleep apnea is for two reasons. Firstly, the number of times you get woken up at night is going to reflect in how you feel the next day. Now, we spoke about how you're pretty tired when you're pregnant anyway. Now you're going to be extra tired. So you're going to wake up feeling as though you haven't had a good night's sleep. And unfortunately, most women who are pregnant will put it down to the bulk. So the tummy that you have there of having to get up to go to the toilet, et cetera, et cetera, and won't consider the snoring, breathing issue as being an issue. But we do know that women, when they're pregnant in the last 3 months, more likely to have apnea. So firstly, that's going to make you tired during the day. But secondly, behind the scenes, every time you get woken up, there's this little surge of adrenaline that happens. And what it's going to do is increase your pulse rate, increase your blood pressure, and change the whole kind of metabolic landscape that's actually happening in your body. Because when you're asleep, you're supposed to be resting. Now what's happening is your brain's going, hey, wake up, little alert, little kind of emergency that's happening in the body. And you shouldn't be having multiple emergencies at night. And so there are changes that occur. What we're particularly worried about in pregnancy is blood pressure and glucose. And apnea is more likely to give you a high blood pressure and more likely to make you diabetic during pregnancy and also after pregnancy. So as an adult, if you have obstructive sleep apnea, you're more likely to have cardiovascular disease, so any heart disease, and more likely to have diabetes. So, but in pregnancy, it's particularly important because now we're dealing with problems, so high blood pressure and diabetes that may affect the baby. So we're very concerned about that. So the important thing about sleep apnea is to recognize that it may be causing a problem with blood pressure. Increasing blood pressure during pregnancy is one of the very top reasons as to why babies, why cesarean sections are done to get babies out, because the blood pressure is going up. And so it's really important to notice whether you are snoring or you might have sleep apnea. If you are pregnant and your blood pressure is going up, that you can tell your doctor, hey, I might have sleep apnea. I have certainly had patients who are pregnant who are concerned they have sleep apnea. We've done the tests. They have mild sleep apnea, but we've treated that with CPAP, so with the equipment to help you breathe properly at night, and the blood pressure has come down, and they've been able to continue with the pregnancy instead of having a preterm baby. So it is really important that you notice if you have snoring and if you have sleep apnea at night. If you're not sure, and you have a bed partner who sleeps well, who doesn't notice, all you need to ask them is to do is to please watch you for an hour after you've gone to sleep to do a little home sleep study. Is there anything happening there at night that they can hear that catch in your breath, that you might be a little more restless when you're asleep? And that's not about going to the toilet or feeling uncomfortable or that you've got too much bulk. So it's really important to find that. Then just generally, nearly half of patients who are pregnant are going to have poorer sleep when they're pregnant. So you really are in one category or the other. Some people sleep very well, other people sleep poorly. Importantly, to find if there is a reason for you to sleep poorly. Generally, if you have insomnia, so you're not able to get enough quantity of sleep, really consider looking at the non-medication ways of managing insomnia. That's cognitive behavioral therapy for insomnia, to see if you can get your sleep better when you're pregnant. Because poor sleep during pregnancy has consequences after the pregnancy as well. There's quite good evidence that if you sleep badly in the last 3 months of the pregnancy, you're more likely, so it's not a direct cause, but you're more likely to get postpartum depression afterwards. And that's a horrible thing to have. So try to get your sleep better when you're pregnant by using non-medication means, because obviously we don't want you to take medication if you can possibly avoid it, because it may affect the baby. So non-medication means, and there are non-medical medication things that you can do to improve sleep. So try those because there are consequences to poor sleep afterwards. And remember that you might have poor sleep when you're pregnant. When baby's born, you're going to have poor sleep again because now you're going to be feeding baby during the night. Your sleep is going to be interrupted for at least 3 or 4 months. That is about the time when most babies start to sleep through, is about 4 months of age. There are a group of them that start sleeping through at 6 to 8 weeks. That's not the normal. That is more an unusual circumstance. So you are going to have poor sleep for another 4 months. So it is important that you get good sleep during pregnancy so that you're prepared for that poorer sleep or that interrupted sleep after pregnancy, about which you can do nothing because babies need to feed until about 4 months when their circadian rhythms kick in and the gut is resting at night and they don't feel hungry at night and start to sleep through. So that is certainly important for pregnancy. Again, there's also evidence that if you have insomnia and you have sleep evidence while you're pregnant, you're more likely to have a preterm baby. You're more likely to have an increased risk of depression when you're pregnant. All of those are important things that we don't want to have complications during the pregnancy. And if you kind of go like, all I have to do is make sure that my sleep is good during pregnancy and there's a better chance of me having a full-term baby, better chance of me not having hypertension, better chance of me not having diabetes, that would be an important focus for pregnant women. Okay, so pregnancy problem for sleep, it really is. And we hope that babies start sleeping through and you can get your sleep back. But throughout life, so from the first menstrual period and really for the rest of life, women have lighter sleep than men and are more prone to all of the sleep disorders. So if we look at insomnia generally, women are more likely to have insomnia than men are, at a rate of 2 to 1. All types of insomnia, women are more likely to have insomnia. Women are more likely to have depression. They're more likely to have anxiety. And both of those mental health disorders come with insomnia as well as part of the disorder. So there's a very interesting relationship between insomnia and depression. So if you have depression, part of the diagnostic criteria for depression is a sleep problem. So if you have insomnia, that's part of the diagnosis of depression. But what we also know is that if you have insomnia from any cause, and that could be from pregnancy, that can be for waking up for baby, you are more likely to have depression later on in life. So really, we're kind of designed almost to have an increased risk of depression as women. So very close relationship between women and anxiety. You're more likely generally to have restless legs. We spoke about restless leg syndrome in pregnancy, but if you look at patients who have restless legs, women outnumber men 2 to 1 on that disorder as well. Sleep apnea, you're not more likely. Men are more likely to have sleep apnea than women are up until the age of 50. Once menopause starts, then the incidence in women increases to parallel that of men. So if we look when the prevalence goes up in men, so it kind of trickles along at an age, and at about 40, that is where sleep apnea becomes more likely in men, partly because they stop doing exercise, generally have a more sedentary lifestyle, and so they put on weight at about 40, and so that's often why it goes up. In women, it tends to stay low until 50, but after 50, it's at a very similar prevalence to men after 40. So when we're less likely to get sleep apnea up until the age of 50. But if we look at sleep and during the menstrual cycle that occurs in older women, so if we get past the teenager who's having the menstrual cycles, but into the 30s and post having children, there are differences in the menstrual cycle. So women will sleep better often in the first half of the cycle, sleep okay in the second half. During the menstrual cycle itself, often sleep worse. We've also got to factor in the fact that a lot of women have painful menstrual periods, so-called dysmenorrhea. And if you have painful periods, it's likely to affect your sleep. And it's really important to manage that pain correctly, so to take the correct anti-inflammatory that manages that pain so that you can sleep properly. Because if you don't sleep properly, then your sensitivity to pain the next day is higher. So whatever pain you have, you're going to experience it as worse. And so we do want you to sleep properly at night so that the pain is better during the day. And there is, and we all know about premenstrual syndrome. So premenstrual syndrome, moodiness, kind of putting a collection of water, so keeping water on board. And that also is associated with depression and insomnia. So that can also create sleep problems. So just within the menstrual cycle, we do have women, and not everybody, so there are certain groups of women who do have severe changes in their sleep related to the menstrual cycle. And those can be difficult to manage. But often we would say to women who do have very poor sleep just for 4 or 5 nights a month, is to take a sleeping tablet for those 4 or 5 months if we cannot resolve what the problems are. Rather sleep better just for those 4 or 5 nights and then stop it, because the rest of the month you're fine. You don't need to take medication the whole month. But rather get good sleep than suffer the consequences of the poor sleep. All right. So the next big thing is menopause. At about the age of 50, those hormones dry up, so the estrogen and progesterone decreases. The hormones that are stimulating the estrogen and progesterone increase, and a lot of changes occur during menopause. So just the drop in the estrogen and the progesterone can make sleep worse. So what we're going to talk about now is we're going to talk about the drop in the hormones. We're going to talk about hot flushes. We're going to talk about the normal changes that occur with aging, and we're going to talk about melatonin. So all of these are happening at the same time, and so you can see that there's quite a lot happening. So just the drop in the estrogen and progesterone. We spoke about how progesterone is sleep friendly, how it increases the duration, increases the quality. If you take that away, you're going to have a decrease in quality and a decrease in duration. Often that is not massive. It's a tiny little thing that happens. But we also spoke about the fact that estrogen and progesterone protect you from sleep apnea because they improve the muscle tone in the back of the throat. With them going away, you are more likely to get sleep apnea. So again, more likely to start snoring, more likely to have a catch in the breath that's happening at night. You also get a change because the estrogen and progesterone is kind of going down. What happens during menopause is you tend to have more testosterone types of hormones floating around. And so you get a change in the way that your body weight is distributed. And so you tend to have a more male kind of body weight distribution as far as fat tissue is concerned. And so that can increase the risk of sleep apnea as well. So everything is kind of moving in the direction of sleep apnea. If you then put on weight, lots of weight after menopause, that will make it more likely to have sleep apnea. So it's really important, again, for women who are post-menopause, if they are suddenly start to snore, if they start to wake up feeling tired in the morning, that they look at the possibility that they may have sleep apnea. If you are concerned at any point during pregnancy or after menopause that you may have sleep apnea, I would urge you to go and look up a questionnaire called Stop Bang. So the Stop Bang goes with snoring, the T is for tiredness, the O is for observed apnea, the P is for high blood pressure, the Bang goes in high BMI, age over 50, neck circumference, and then gender, which is male, which we don't use. So we look at the top 7. If you're scoring 4 out of those top 7, there's an 80% chance you might have apnea. So I urge you to go and tell somebody about that, your doctor, to get a test done so to make sure that you don't have apnea because of the long-term consequences. Estrogen and progesterone are a problem because once they disappear, you lose that protection against apnea. Now, when you decrease estrogen and progesterone as well, you'll find that you're more likely to have hot flushes at night. These are very disruptive to sleep. So the hot flush feels like that your body temperature is just climbing and there's no way to pull it back. And so often women will wake up feeling very hot, often sweating at night, taking off all the bed clothes, often taking off pajamas because they're drenched in sweat. And then it's extremely difficult to go back to sleep once that has happened. And when we look at the data, there's no question that hot flushes are the single biggest reason why women have sleep problems after menopause. They call them vasomotor symptoms of menopause. And with the drop in estrogen and progesterone, you're more likely to have these hot flushes. What we do know as well is the hormone replacement therapy, which replaces some estrogen and progesterone, is designed to manage those hot flushes and can make sleep much better. But that's really all it does. There's really no good evidence that if you don't have the hot flushes at night, that replacing estrogen or progesterone is not necessarily going to improve your sleep. So the replacement therapy really designed to manage the hot flushes so that it doesn't disrupt your sleep and your sleep can get better. So that's the first thing, estrogen and progesterone. The second problem that you have when you go through menopause is you're more likely to get the other sleep disorders. We've spoken a bit about sleep apnea. You're more likely to get restless legs as you get older, and you're more likely to have insomnia. So again, if we look at the prevalence of insomnia over the lifespan, the prevalence is likely to be 10% if you're in your early 30s. Once you get over 50 and certainly into the 70s and 80s, the prevalence can go up to 15 or 20 or even 25%. So you're more likely to get insomnia, you're more likely to get depression, you're more likely to get anxiety, and all of those are linked to sleep disorders. So the second problem that you have after menopause is this natural increase in the sleep disorders. The same increase is happening in men, so that's not specific to women, but it is an aging thing. Then you have just the typical aging changes that happen in sleep. So not necessarily sleep disorders, but how does your normal sleep change as you get older? So what we know, we have really good data on this, is that as you get older, this is anybody, whether you're male or female, is that your sleep is likely to be lighter. It is likely to be a little bit shorter. You are likely to have more awakenings during sleep, and the quality is likely to be not as good. Now, it's really important that these are normal changes that occur with aging. Therefore, they're not things that we would fix because they're normal for aging. And many people sleep well into their 80s and 90s, but they still have these changes in their sleep and they don't necessarily need to fix this. So these are normal changes. And it's important that we put this on top of the changes that are happening in menopause, because this is just adding, we're putting layers and layers of things that are going wrong with sleep that are all kind of happening together. The last problem that you might have is melatonin. So the best melatonin you're going to have as an increase at night, this big surge of melatonin, which makes you feel sleepy. The best surge you're going to have is when you're 15 years old, and it drops from then on. So there's still a surge, but it's not as high. Certainly the data we have is once you get to 50 or 55, again, both male and female, the melatonin is below the level at which it's effective. So you may find as you move into the 50s that you're not as sleepy as you used to be at night. So it's harder to go to fall asleep because you're not as sleepy. And we think that melatonin, that drop in melatonin, is responsible for these normal changes that occur in aging. Decrease in quality, more awakenings, less slow wave sleep. We do think that melatonin is related to that. So the drop in melatonin may itself cause sleeping problems. So you end up with a difficult situation in that if you develop sleep difficulties after the age of 50 during menopause, is to try and figure out which of these things might be responsible for those changes. Certainly, we need to exclude the sleep disorders. We need to exclude depression. We need to exclude anxiety. So we need to exclude the big medical issues. We certainly need to treat hot flushes if they are there, because managing that will make sleep better. When it comes to the aging changes and the melatonin, it can be a bit tricky. Fortunately, we can add in melatonin. We can give melatonin supplements, which are a much more natural way of managing sleep than sleeping tablets. And we can try that and see if that improves the sleep quality. What is, I think, important to understand is that post-menopause, a lot of women are still working, a lot of women are still very functional, and so need to have good sleep. And we need to manage sleep properly for them so that they can sleep properly, so that they can continue to function. And we don't want a situation where we go, she's 65, so she should be okay if we don't manage the sleep. No, because a lot of 65-year-olds, including me, are still working very hard, and we need our sleep, and we need to be able to sleep properly. So through the ages in women, it's quite obvious that we have additional problems to our sleep that men don't have, and we do need to look after our sleep as women, to do whatever we can to improve our sleep, that we do get good sleep, because there are consequences to poor sleep. Not only the ones that I've mentioned, but we know that poor sleep, if you have insomnia, ongoing insomnia, you have an increased risk of diabetes, you have an increased risk of cardiovascular disease, you have an increased risk of dementia. Sleep apnea on its own increases the risk of all kinds of other disorders. And all of that is boiling down to, if you have poor sleep, either a reduction in quantity or a reduction in quality, you are not servicing this car, the body, properly every night. And if you don't service any car properly, it breaks down faster. And the breakdown would be the development of cardiovascular disease, diabetes, obesity, depression, dementia, etc., etc. So during this Women's Month, can I appeal to all women that you look after your sleep, that you do whatever you need to do to get your sleep. If you're not sleeping well, please go tell your doctor about that so that you can engage with the facilities that are available to either record your sleep to see what's happening during the night or to get some help in managing your sleep better. Thank you for listening. I hope this was helpful, and please have a good Women's Month.
You've been listening to another production from Solid Gold Podcasts.